Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You are entering the news vault from KCBS Radio.
Flames and the smoke.
I have a tape recorder here in my hand.
Now nobody would think of doing that.
The newsmen were blocking the door.
It worked for a couple of seconds.
Bringing the sounds of history back to life. Here is your host, Stan Bunger.
And this time on the Audio Vault from KCBS Radio, we go back a half century, 1968, a time of turmoil in the United States, and a name synonymous with that turmoil, that of Eldridge Cleaver. Eldridge Cleaver, the black militant who wrote the book Soul on Ice, released in 1968. Cleaver had been a prison inmate for many years, paroled in 1966, partly on the back of the writings he had done, a collection of essays that eventually would be published as the book Soul on Ice. After his parole, Cleaver, Huey Newton, and Bobby Seale got together. Cleaver became the Black Panther Party's Minister of Information out of Oakland, and at one point decided to run for president. And that's what leads us to this particular piece of audio. On October 8, 1968, Cleaver held a news conference in Oakland to react to news that the Supreme Court had refused to intervene. Cleaver had been trying to get his name on the California ballot for the 1968 presidential election. California's Secretary of State, Frank Jordan, not the same Frank Jordan who would later be chief of police in San Francisco, this Frank Jordan had ruled that since Cleaver would not be the constitutionally required 35 years of age by the time of the presidential inauguration, he was not a legitimate candidate. He called a news conference to respond to that. It was actually just about a month later that Cleaver would be facing imprisonment after a shootout that had occurred back in April of 68. He jumped bail in November of 1968. He went to Cuba and then Algeria, eventually becoming disillusioned with communism, returned to the United States in 1975, and the charges against him were eventually dropped. But this episode in 1968 shows Eldridge Cleaver looking to become a presidential candidate and losing a battle before the Supreme Court.
We've all got mic problems there.
Okay, I'm James Vann, Northern California Chairman, Peace and Freedom Party. We have here on the panel today Paul Halvonik, who is the Northern California Director of the American Civil Liberties Union, Eldridge Cleaver, who is Minister of Information, Black Panther Party, and presidential candidate, Peace and Freedom Party. We have called the conference today, first of all, to announce and to discuss the process of appeal which the Peace and Freedom Party has gone through in an attempt to get the name of Eldridge Cleaver on the ballot in California, which turned out to be a rather disgusting process. And we want to announce the result of our appeals, finally terminating in a hearing before the U.S. Supreme Court. I'd like now to have Mr. Halvonik speak about that.
Well, yesterday the Supreme Court of the United States turned down our petition for a hearing to require the Secretary of State to place Mr. Cleaver's name on the ballot. We lost in that endeavor, I think, because of time. The state filed a number of affidavits on its ballots and how they were already progressing and how it would be impossible to carry on the election if we were to have the names of Cleaver and additionally another case, the name of Gene McCarthy put on the ballot at this time. I think that wasn't the case, but I think it might have been persuasive to the court. The ultimate result is a confusing and misleading ballot for the people of California. Mr. Cleaver's name on the ballot for any purposes other than information is irrelevant. You can't vote for a presidential candidate directly. You only vote for electors pledged to the candidate. Those electors are certified. If you vote Peace and Freedom, you vote for electors pledged to Mr. Cleaver, whether his name's there or not. So for people interested in voting for Mr. Cleaver, you still have just as good an opportunity as you had before. Simply mark an X in the Peace and Freedom box in the ballot.
Mr. Cleaver, how do you feel about not being on the California ballot?
Well, I think that we're more concerned about the motivation of the people who have moved to block us from being on the ballot. We fulfill all of the legal requirements of a political party for being able to conduct its business through the legal channels. And we feel that it's a politically motivated activity on the part of the Secretary of State. As you know, this is an election year. California is a very key state in terms of deciding this whole presidential election. And because they anticipate, and we anticipate, there's going to be a very hotly contested election. It's going to be a close vote count all the way around, so that those who are really trying to do everything they can to win that office by any means necessary are not stopping at any move. And this is a particular move we feel politically motivated to help those who control Jordan to win California in November.
Well, what's the next stop? Where do you go?
Well, we've gone to the United States Supreme Court. It would be a decision for the attorney as to whether or not he would re-petition the court. I don't know if that could be possible at this time, but we're going to go right ahead with our work, attempts to organize people and to pull people out of both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, essentially to destroy those two parties, because we feel that they have gotten so far out of line with the needs and the desires of the American people that they virtually constitute criminal conspiracies against the people. So we're going to continue to organize and to build the Peace and Freedom Party so that the people will have a true alternative to the present chaos and madness that prevails in this country.
You going to try to pull anybody out of the American Independent Party, Eldridge?
Well, we think that the American Independence Party will die on its own weight, its own futility. We don't buy, you see, we don't buy the propaganda that we read in the newspapers, which says that the American people are flocking to George Wallace's banner. We don't believe that. We think that this is propaganda principally paid for by Richard Nixon for the purpose of having a right-wing extremist to the right of himself so that he could come out looking like a middle-of-the-roader with Hubert Humphrey on the left. This is an absurd situation, and we feel Richard Nixon is behind that. And later for George Wallace and his party, the American people don't need it, and I don't think that they're going to be deceived by that.
I want to underscore the role of the Secretary of State in this. It was as Eldridge has pointed out, it was a deliberate, predetermined attempt to keep the Peace and Freedom Party off the ballot and to keep the name of Eldridge Cleaver off the ballot. 2 days before Eldridge Cleaver was the certified Peace and Freedom Party candidate, the Secretary of State had announced, and it was published in the papers, that Eldridge Cleaver would not be certified on the California ballot. This was even before he was a certified candidate. The Secretary of State had moved deliberately to keep Cleaver's name off the ballot. And that was not even the issue. The issue, beside the fact that his job, that he outstepped the bounds of his job, as Mr. Halvonik can say, can speak to the nature of the Secretary of State's job as defined by the California Constitution. The crux of the matter was that we were well aware that Mr. Cleaver was not 35. However, the Constitution does not say that you must be 35 to run for the office of president. It says you must be 35 before you can assume that office. However, ours was not a candidacy to attain the office of the president. Ours was an office to use that mechanism of running for the president to educate the American people about the decadence of this society.
And this is what they didn't want to happen.
If that's the case, then if Mr. Jordan actually had the motivations, do you think that he was trying to dissuade people from voting for your party because they wouldn't vote for the party, or do you think he's trying to dissuade them from voting for it because he favors another candidate?
Well, it would be a combination of that, wouldn't it? If we would show a very good result at the poll, This would be very embarrassing to these decadent political parties that are now on the scene. At the same time, they could hope not to have any votes come our way so that they could have these votes in their own column. So I think that a politically motivated Secretary of State would have both of those things in mind.
Is Huey's name going to be on the ballot across the
way? I don't see why not. He fulfilled all the requirements.
Is it on the ballot?
It is. He's a certified candidate.
As yes.
The Secretary of State, I believe, very definitely moved to try to dissuade people from Cleaver's name from appearing on the ballot and to dissuade people from voting for peace and freedom. I think he did that deliberately, acting on the knowledge that he has that the American people, by and large, want their ballots to count. And by announcing even before Cleaver was a certified candidate that he would not be certified on the ballot, the Secretary of State was, I believe, moving deliberately to keep people, to move people away from a tendency to vote for peace and freedom. And he maintained that position throughout, and therefore hoping that many people who would have voted peace and freedom, wanting their ballots to count, would be somehow beguiled into thinking that they can vote for a presidential candidate through some other mechanism. But any vote for peace and freedom still is a vote for Eldridge Cleaver for president.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
We'd like to
Eldridge,
comment.
I wasn't at the University of California today. What happened there?
Yeah, I want to get sort of that.
People who attended classes.
Can you come a little closer? Because we can't pick it up. I'm sorry. Otherwise, we can't hear what you're saying.
I think that the school opened on schedule. Classes were held on schedule. And members of the faculty and also guest lecturers fulfilled their responsibilities. In the particular situation that I was involved in, we were running a little late because of a lot of interest in this particular course. There's a crush at the door. We had to go in through the back door. The newsmen were blocking the door with their cameras and so their tape recorders, you know, and their long noses. But we went in and we delivered the first of our 10 scheduled lectures, and we'll be back next Tuesday for number two. I enjoyed it myself. Had a very good response from the students. They raised some very penetrating and interesting questions, and I thought it was a very good session. One of my first experiences at university, I didn't make it on through the other way, and so I'm satisfied with the results. I'm sure that Mickey Mouse Regan and Donald Duck Rafferty will not be satisfied, but that's another one of their problems, you know.
What's the gist of lecture number one, Albert?
Well, we laid the framework to try and get into the roots of racism in this country. We talked about possible sources of color symbolism in Western society, dealt with the structure of the concept of history as black people see history, and a different concept as white people see it. And we also dealt with, how can I really describe a lecture that lasted an hour in a few words? But basically, this was laying the foundation and building the broad framework for subsequent lectures. And we laid the foundation for understanding the color symbolism and the connotation, negative and positive connotations to the colors black and white in this country, and getting into slavery and how all of that was intermingled. You know?
You mentioned some of the questions. What were the most interesting questions you had? Perhaps that would give us a better idea of what how the thing progressed. What did they want to know?
Well, they were interested in knowing how color symbolism, which basically you see black and white, it has this positive and negative valuation in this society. You talk about black cats being bad luck. You wear black clothes for mourning at funerals. Blackbeard the pirate. When you do something evil, they call it blackmail. On the other side, like when a virgin bride is taken, she wears white clothes to symbolize good. White is right, and so forth. This is connected was something in the physical phenomenon of nature, and it was my position that this is possibly connected with night and day. The fact that human beings found it very difficult to survive, and their survival was threatened during nighttime. You know, when the sun goes down, the vision of human beings is no longer very functional, so there were a lot of dangers in the environment at night, so that it became negative in the way people related to night. They were glad when the sun rises and all that, you know. So we got into the very, what we feel to be the very root of the negative and positive connotations of black and white, and how this became intermingled when slavery was set up between black people and white people, and the color symbolism attached to that. And so the negative connotations that relate back to night and day are somehow intermingled with that. And we brought that down and made the distinction between racism that does not involve any color, and how this particular racism in this country, because of the color situation, becomes even deeper and more problematical for the people involved.
I'd like to get that line you gave the people up there about you spoke and the sun was still shining, the walls didn't fall.
Well, you know, these demagogic politicians like Ronald Reagan and Max Rafferty had been predicting that chaos would quickly follow upon the heels of any appearance by myself on the campus. And when we came out of the room, we found that it was a very nice day outside. The sun was shining. The walls and the buildings of the university seemed to be intact. There were no smoke clouds in the distance. And a very beautiful day. In fact, it was much more beautiful because Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck weren't around. Well, that's all I can say.
Mr. Cleaver, in light of the court decision, refusal by the Supreme Court to act. Do you expect to be able to finish your lecture series, the 10 lectures?
Because of the Supreme Court decision not certifying me for the ballot?
No, the other one, the state Supreme Court.
Oh.
Was it
District You mean
court?
The District Court of Appeal decision concerning
the
my parole?
Refused to hear it, right.
And the Supreme Court has refused to hear it?
State Supreme Court.
They've refused to hear it?
Didn't they?
I don't know. Have they?
I'm not sure.
I haven't heard anything about that.
So it is
60 days on that?
I have 60 days to perfect an appeal to the Supreme Court. I better call my lawyer as soon as I get through here, find out if that's the case.
Wrong.
I hope so. But the point is that I never know what those people are going to do next. And so I can't schedule my life according to their whims. My present plans are to continue with my work. If it's interrupted by some of their arbitrary moves, then we'll have to deal with that when that happens. But at present, I haven't altered my plans. I haven't altered my perspective. I haven't altered anything that I intend to do. And it's up to them to force me to alter my plans.
Some of the people who were a little lukewarm on your appearance at Cal have made reference to the language you use. What's been your reaction to that, to denying you appearance on UC campus because of the language you're said to use all the time?
I say it's none of their fucking business.
recently launched in Alameda County, in Oakland, in Berkeley, in Richmond, and in San Francisco, a police control program, which is co-sponsored by the Peace and Freedom Party and the Black Panther Party. And one of the direct impetus for this program, it can be seen in the police action of last week where George Basket, truck driver, was shot by an off-duty San Francisco policeman, where there's ample evidence that this was a racist policeman, a racist act, and where police officers should have been removed from the force a long time ago. We think that this is directly a result of the police not being able to discipline themselves. And the Peace and Freedom Party and the Black Panther Party have gone together to jointly sponsor a new program which would remove the establishing of programs and policies of the police department away from the kind of internal mechanisms which we now have, resulting in a kind of chaos where a Chief Cahill moves to condone the actions of the police officer even before the facts are out. We want to remove this kind of demagogy to the community. where the police are hired. The police are hired to serve the community. They are hired to be servants of the people. The police control initiative will attempt to do just that by placing the control back into the hands of the people at a local level.
How so? What are you saying? A police review board or what kind of situation are you planning to set up?
I'll ask Mr. Harry Orr, who's the spokesman for San Francisco Peace and Freedom, to describe the police control setup as is proposed for San Francisco.
OAR?
The first point I'd like to make is that this is not a police review board. It is a police control board, and they're dealing with two different concepts here. Now, the Peace and Freedom Party and the Black Panther Party in San Francisco will very shortly have on the streets our police control petition. And very briefly, this would, as Jim said, give control of the police in San Francisco to the people of San Francisco through the following mechanism. There are 9 police precincts in San Francisco. Within each precinct, there would be 5 elected members to control the workings and the day-to-day running of those particular precinct stations. Now, each of these 9 elected boards would elect a chairman. The chairman of these 9 boards would sit as a reconstituted police commission of San Francisco, and they would be vested with all of the authority.
Underground thing?
No, these people would be elected by the people within the area that they are serving.
About replacing the police commission.
We're talking about replacing the existing police commission with 9 people from the various neighborhoods who are responsive to the electorate, to the people in those neighborhoods. And this citywide police control board, composed of the 9 chairmen, would have complete power to hire, fire, set policies, set wages, and would indeed be the final, ultimate decision-making power vis-a-vis police action or inaction. And they would also have the power, I'd like to add, to hire and fire the police commissioner to replace him when necessary.
And the chief, too?
And the chief, yes. That's what I meant to say.
Would it be a board parallel to then, not replacing the police commission?
No, it would replace the presently constituted police commission, because this will require a city charter amendment. And we're not planning to set up a parallel institution. Rather, we're planning to disband the institution that now exists, namely the police commissioners, because we don't think it's responsive to anybody except the hierarchy in the police department.
The control through this mechanism comes from the fact that the commissioners and the various precinct elected people are elected by the people, as well as being subject to their recall. So whenever the policies of the police, the policies established by this commission, are out of line with the wishes of the community, they may then be recalled.
Do you have a draft of the petition?
I have a leaflet describing the one in Richmond. San Francisco's is a new program. I could hand that to you if you understand.
Remember to follow the News Vault from KCBS Radio on social media. On Facebook, we're at News Vault Podcast. On Twitter, find us at News Vault SF. On Instagram, we're at News Vault. Until our next episode, you are leaving the News Vault from KCBS Radio.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.